Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the regular meeting of the Napomo Community Services District for January 11th, 2006. So we're starting in our 41st year shortly. And if you would please rise and join me for the flag salute. Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Donna, would you call for the roll, please?
Director Eby?
Here.
Director Trotter? Director Morrissey?
Here.
Director Wynn?
Here.
President Verhaelen?
Here. At this time, I'm going to move something up out of order. We have a resolution of appreciation for Kathy Beltran today, and I need a motion and a second to adopt the resolution.
So moved.
Mr. Wynn moved.
Second.
A second for Mr. Eby. Could you call for the vote, please?
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Morrissey?
Yes.
President Verhaelen?
Yes. With that, it's floating around someplace here. Aha, I see it.
Is it in here?
Yes, it is. Have you had a chance to sign it, Mr. Eby? Okay.
I haven't either.
While Mr. Wynn and Mr. Eby are signing this, I get to have one of those rare occasions in presenting one of the tried and true employees of the NCSC. And whereas Kathy Beltran Get those persons back there to sign that. And that is a card from the board and a gift card for you to just go out and fluff and play with.
Oh, boy.
And again, thank you very much for your just outstanding service.
If I could say one thing before Kathy leaves, or give one expression also of her level of service. As you all know, Kathy's a billing clerk, and like President Verheilig pointed out, she's our front line. She's the one who gets to deal with folks who don't pay bills and have to have water shut off and has to interface with these people on a monthly basis. And I've been here, as you know, for about 16 months now, and I've had one caller come through and complain to me about Kathy's demeanor. One time. And this was a person who, of course, was, you know, a month overdue and everything else. But and again, countless times I've heard people, as President Verheilig has given his testimony, testify to me about how pleasant the experience of signing up for water here and paying your bill to the Napomo Community Services District is, and it really rests squarely on Kathy's shoulders, and I thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
What I would like to do, if you don't mind, is to get Mr. Trotter to sign.
Oh,
he's
okay.
Having surgery today, so yeah. But again,
okay.
Thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank you.
Said, and I guess we now get down to public comment, which is on any item, right, which is this time within the jurisdiction of the NCSD board, and approximately 3 minutes. Would like to start with Commander Bastien.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members of the board, staff, and public. Happy New Year. The holiday season has passed, and we did very well, except for the deluge of rain, which caused some flooding down on the east side, but no major incidences for New Year's, etc. Over the holidays, though, we did have one burglary of a residence in an astute neighbor, heard the window breaking, and deputies were there within a minute and caught a 16-year-old going through the house. He's also responsible for two other ones, so that kind of resolved it. The real plus is that the neighbors listen up and watch out for each other and then call us. That's the important thing on the crime prevention end of it. Nothing slated for the new year, no excitement. We did change our enterprise financial system, so I had hoped to have our statistics. In the past 2 years, we've compared the previous year with the following year, so I will have those for you next month. The typewritten form will compare 05 and 04 for you so that you can see the numbers and the arrests, etc. So we didn't get that done because of the changeover in our pay system as well as the enterprise financial system. And last, let me just offer, coming up in February, you know, on the 22nd, we're going to start our 26th Citizens Academy, and if you have not attended one of those, if you're interested, it meets one day a week for a couple of hours, and each division and bureau does a presentation throughout the entire department. There's tours as well as a ride-along, and it's free, and you can learn about what the department does all the way from the civil division to custody, all the way to patrol, to admin, to our special units, and they all do presentations. So if anybody's interested, I'll leave this with you. You can make copies, and there's also an application form to carry a call. And any friends or members of the public that like to attend, it's just a real good education. You kind of see the back. There's a lot more than what we present to you and what you see as a general public view. So, with that, any questions, comments, things we need to resolve in '06? Yes, well, I can.
From the board, from the public, any comments or questions for Commander Bastien?
Again, I thank you for the opportunity, and yes, sir.
Staffing level for '06.
Our staffing level?
Right.
We're currently down 10 positions, which are being filled. We just finished hiring the six, and yesterday's governor's budget, the initial budget, and of course, after they get the taxes in, have the May revised, but we will have our rural and small county monies back, the $500,000, so the rural program will stay. Currently, we're running at 19. We should have 24, but that's because of retirements and folks leaving, and it takes time to backfill. So we're hoping by midsummer to be back up to our allocated positions. So you will see some new faces because we do cycle them through each one of the three stations for training. And from start to finish, it takes about 18 months to get a deputy fully trained and up. So the lag behind is just because of retirements and cycles and budgets.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Commander Bastien, and we and I wish you a happy new year and see you Monday night in Oceano.
Oh, yes, you certainly will. If it isn't one thing, it's four others. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, is there any other public comment on items that are not on today's agenda?
My name is
Deneen.
Bill Deneen, and I've lived in Napomo since, I think it was 62, and I want to compliment everyone here. I've seen history moving along, and many of you are new to the community, and I want to thank you for participating. When I think back of what this group was, what the community was maybe two decades ago, this group was meeting in a, I guess the building was here, it was an awful, terrible, drafty, nasty building. No one was interested. And you've come so far. And I want to compliment everyone here for participating in Napomo, because Napomo, as we all know, is exploding. I hate to see it. I kind of wish we'd go back to about 20 years ago when we had maybe less than 2,000 people here, but we are the fastest growing area of the world, and it needs adjustment, control, and suppression. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deneen. Good morning, Mr. Blair. Happy New
morning.
Year.
Morning. Yeah, Happy New Year. Bob Blair, Rural Grandy. As you know, I was a director here for 10 years, and I would like to congratulate Kathy as well. The other two ladies in the office, too. The only reason this district runs like it does is because of those three women in the office. You have three of the best employees of any probably special district in the whole state of California, and these people know what they're doing. Sometimes I don't think you people know what you're doing, but they know what they're doing. Speaking of that.
Thank you, Mr. Blair.
You had an article in the paper, Adobe Press, 2 weeks ago. Larry's quoted in there something about bringing the train into the station. You quoted the average rainfall in Napomo as being 18.2 inches, and you showed graphs. The 18.2 inches gives the indication to the public that for the last 4 years, we were below average rainfall. Here is a graph out of your water management plan that I gleaned off of the thing the other day. Clearly shows that the average rainfall for Napomo is 15.86 inches. I keep excellent rain records. I have two rain gauges I have out in the middle of my pasture. 2003, we had 17, 2002, we had 17.6 inches. 2003, we had 16.45 inches. Last year, we had 26 inches. This year, we have 11 something inches already, and it's supposed to rain tomorrow. We are not behind on rainfall for the last 4 years. And it really upsets me when I see things from this district in the paper that distorts the truth and kind of misguides the public. I think if that's the press here, they need to make a correction. Another thing is Summit Station. I went to a Board of Supervisors meeting with Michael the other day last year. Michael said that you didn't use all the 52 acre feet or whatever your allotment was for that year, last year. Yet you denied me and other people in Summit Station water to build secondary units. I wish you people would make some kind of decision on Summit Station so that I and the other people up there can take the appropriate action to get the water we need. In the meantime, while you've been dilly-dallying around, the road fees have gone up $2,000, other costs have gone up, and you're just costing us all one heck of a lot of money in construction costs and other things. Third and finally, when I was president of this board, I don't forget which time, I was twice, Cypress Ridge came before us, and we were going to take over the administration of Cypress Ridge. I had a tour, I don't know if Michael had a tour or not, but we had tours of those facilities. That is one of the best sewer production plants in the county. They have plenty of water up there. In fact, they run the sprinklers when it's raining because if they don't, the lakes will overflow. There's more than enough water up there to run 9 more holes of golf and build 127 or 147 houses. You people here in Napomo got enough problems here without going up there and getting involved trying to stop building in Cypress Ridge. That is a premier community. There's 3 premier communities in this area. I don't think Cypress Ridge is part of Napomo, but if you're going to include it, it is one of the nicest communities. And in case you don't know what a good community looks like, here's a brochure on Trilogy. Which is the Woodlands community. This is the kind of community I'm involved in over in Nevada. This is the type of community I have my house in. This is the kind of community I like and promote. This is nothing, have nothing but good things. Martin will tell you, the sheriff very seldom ever goes out to Black Lake or to any of these golf course communities because there's very little crime out there. The school buses don't go out there. The only thing that goes out there is the tax collector who collects a lot of money for this county, and those people receive very little services. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blair.
My name is John Miranda. I've lived in Napomo since 96. Lived in Santa Maria all my life. I have some questions concerning the water pipeline that you people are talking about building from San Maria over here, because I don't understand, and the only way I can find out is to ask questions. As I understand, and I was here in Santa Maria when they put the pipeline through Napomo down Thompson across the river to Santa Maria. As I understand, there's a valve here in Napomo that somebody owns. And my question is, why can't we tie to that valve? And if we can't tie to that valve, why can't we tap into the line? Everybody that has been talking about putting this 6 million plus line has never brought that up to the public. There's a lot of people in the public that I know that have asked me, why can't they tie in there? I don't know, but I wish somebody would tell us. Because it is concerning us, a lot of people, the silent majority. I'd like to have an answer on that.
Mr. Sainz. Well, I can't give you a full answer. Obviously, you know, the question's just been posed. But there's two things. One is, of course, that's a state water pipeline, and we're not a subscriber to state water. That's the clean and easy one. You know, we're not a contractor with state water. So, even though that pipeline is going through the community, we have no contractual context in which to receive that water. Secondly, you may recall that there was an initiative on this very issue about whether or not the district could tap into that state water. And I forget all the details. It was before my time as legal counsel, so I can't really speak in detail to it, but I recall that there were 2 votes that actually precluded the district from tapping into that line. So those are two reasons right there that seem to be, and maybe there's a third or a fourth, but those are the ones that come to my mind in response to your questions. Mr. Wynn, would you care to...
If I can add a third reason to what council has already mentioned, this has been brought up many, many times in Napomo. In fact, it's one of the most obvious things that everybody points out. So it's been discussed publicly a lot. The law actually says that since the capacity was set by the people who are members of this pipeline, that if we took water here, we would have to get the approval of every other user from here down to and including the city of Santa Barbara. We would have to get votes from Santa Maria and Buellton and San Ynez and Gaviota and you name it, all the way down. And that simply isn't going to happen. All it would take would be one of those people to say no, and it's canceled.
Well, that answers part of my question. In the years that I've been here, I've never seen, would you say it's come up to what maybe I was out of town at the time. I never saw it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any other public comment on items not on the agenda? Seeing none, then we'll bring it back to the board and move to the consent agenda. Any corrections? I have some. Any items that you want to pull? Okay. Regarding the minutes, correction. Let's see. Maybe I got a question on the warrants. No. Cancel that. Regarding the minutes on page number 2, item E1, about the third line, about the fourth line up from the box, it says yes votes, no votes, has President Wynn. It should probably be Director Wynn.
I wasn't going to say change that.
And then, well, on our agenda, it says special meeting of January 3rd. Probably that should be changed to 4th on our agenda under item number D2. Mm. Basically all I had for corrections to the minutes. So with that, we need a motion to accept and approve as amended.
So moved.
Mr. Wynn second. Made the motion. Mr. Eby second. Madam Secretary. And okay, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Seitz. Only been at this a year, so you know you don't. Open it to public comment for any items on the consent agenda. Seeing none, then we'll bring it back to the board and Madam Secretary.
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you. Okay, moving on to item number E1, which is committee assignments. I'd like to request Mr. Seitz to give us a discussion on the appropriateness of the classification of the committees, standing versus ad hoc.
Right. Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the board, members of the audience. A couple things I just wanted to point to your attention with the adoption of the new laws related to community service districts. Committees have been specifically authorized by the board. And that's not to mean that they weren't authorized before. It just means that now it is clearly stated under our enabling statutes. Again, I want to rejoin the discussion of the difference between standing committees and ad hoc committees. When I saw this in the agenda packet, I noticed that the president had designated these as standing committees. A standing committee by, and I don't have any quarrel with it, I just want to just make sure that the president and the board understands the distinction between a standing committee and an ad hoc committee. A standing committee is a legislative body of the board. Therefore, they must comply with the Brown Act. As you may recall from prior discussions, that a standing committee or legislative body had two requirements. One is that their meetings had to be set by resolution or motion of the board. In other words, standing committees will meet on, this standing committee will meet on the first and second Friday of the, or whatever it is, of the month or the year or whenever. And secondly, there was a requirement to comply with the Brown Act, and that is posting of your notices, your agendas, and assuming that the press had made appropriate application to forward those agendas onto the press. That law changed a little bit about 2 years ago regarding standing committees, which basically stated that a standing committee didn't, the board did not have to set meeting dates for standing committees, and that standing committees could just rely on the 72-hour posting under the Brown Act. So there was a kind of a shift to allow more flexibility with standing committees. Ad hoc committees, on the other hand, or on the other side of the coin, are not legislative bodies. And I just want to read to you from a portion of the Brown Act. And by the way, I'm reading from the Attorney General's open and public meeting pamphlet. It says, an ad hoc advisory committee composed solely of less than a quorum of the legislative body is exempt from the Brown Act. The exemption covers advisory committees that are ad hoc in nature, meaning that they serve a limited or single purpose, are not perpetual, and are dissolved once their specific task is completed. An example would be an advisory committee composed of less than a quorum created to interview candidates for vacant positions. So what I wanted to point out on this list here is that these committees are designated as standing committees, which in turn defines them as legislative bodies of this board, which in turn requires that their agendas be posted and that they be posted 72 hours in advance of the meeting. Now, typically in the past, we have had what we call, these committees have been ad hoc committees under the definitions that I just presented to the board. If the board wants to move forward with standing committees, then I just want to make sure everybody understands that there would be an agenda posting. If they want to move forward as these with ad hoc committees, then I just want to make it clear that these would be what I would call suspended committees, and they'd only be activated at the direction of the board to study or interview or report to the board on specific items on an item-by-item basis. And then they would report back to the board. And once that report back to the board was made, then the ad hoc committee would be suspended. In other words, the ad hoc committee itself would have no ability to meet on items where no direction was given for them to meet. A good example of that would be the Finance and Audit Committee. When we do our budgets, you know, typically we give direction to the board, to two members, to study the finances or the budget, and then report back to the board at the time the budget is actually adopted for their recommendations. So when you take a look at these committee assignments, I think the number one thing you, we have to wrestle with is, are these going to be on an assignment by assignment basis without having perpetual jurisdiction, without having the ability to meet and confer, without without an agenda being posted, or are they going to be truly ad hoc in nature? I probably messed that up. Are they ad hoc in nature where they will only meet at the specific request of the board to review a specific item and then report back to the board and then in turn be suspended until they are further action or study is requested by the board? That's a long, long explanation, but I want to make sure that the distinction between the standing committee and an ad hoc committee is discussed or debated.
I would say, in my estimation, if I may, that they probably operate much more like ad hoc committees, even though they don't dissolve, so to speak, after an action happens and is concluded. They're still there for consultation, but they tend to operate more like an ad hoc. Mr. Nguyen, you have some thoughts on that?
My question is this. If we have a committee, for example, if I look at finance and audit, it seems to me that the board says, you two guys look over the budget, meet with staff, come back, give us a recommendation. Once they've done that and we've finished it, they basically don't do anything for the rest of the year. That sounds to me like a really ad hoc committee. I don't have any problem with that. Santa Maria Supplemental Water seems to me that that's going to go on and off all year long. Now, if I understand your distinction, what would we do? Would we be every meeting? We'd have to say, you guys keep on going for another meeting, or?
No, what I would envision that as an ad hoc committee. If these were to remain as ad hoc committees, then I think the way, the most practical way that it would work is that you would see probably on the consent agenda, direct ad hoc committee to review ongoing negotiations or contracts and report back to the board on their findings or their review on a date specific. And it would just simply be a consent item, you know, on the agenda. Three lines, and typically what I see is like three lines saying, direct the, then report back to the board. Then in the interim, that committee would actually be suspended. I mean, the two members would be designated, but there would be no ability for them to meet further to discuss that particular item. On the other hand, if it was a standing committee, again, it would be ongoing jurisdiction, and when they met, it would be a public meeting. It would be the Brown Act posting.
I want to chime in because many times the get-togethers are rather short notice. So even to have it on the consent agenda to go meet with John Doe, there's no meeting to put that on because you're going the next day to meet with Cannon, Santa Maria, who knows whom. So it, although the ad hoc gives you more flexibility by having to put it on a consent agenda, makes it time-wise, you get your hands tied.
Right. I'm not saying either one is easier to administer. Obviously, they both have their pluses and their minuses. You know, I'm only reporting to you what the California legislature has enacted and what the requirements are for each of them. I, as a practical matter, I have seen the concept of the ad hoc committee work fairly effectively in other organizations where there's a consent agenda item saying, take this matter to it, because we know what's coming up from staff's perspective. It's not perfect. I don't want anybody to think. But on the other hand, if an item was to come up, let's just say we have an agenda item, we meet every 2 weeks, and an emergency situation came up that was unknown at the time the meeting occurred, and there was a need to form the ad hoc committee in order to get this done because somebody else is meeting, then you can always get it under the agenda under those extraordinary circumstances. On the other hand, if there is, for example, the supplemental water thing is, if the instructions were to review the current progress of supplemental water was on the agenda and says report back to the board in 3 months. You don't have to report back to the board the following board meeting. I don't want to make sure that everybody understands that it's not the time frame on reporting back is flexible. It just has to be stated.
Question. Mr. Eby, I think
The way you explained it, for it to be an ad hoc meeting or ad hoc committee and have a meeting, it would have to be authorized by the board, which means you could only, it essentially limits you to a 2 week notice on an ad hoc meeting. I mean,
the ad hoc meeting itself doesn't have to be agenda.
No, but it has to be authorized, doesn't it, or ordered by the board, and that then the board only meets every 2 weeks.
Correct.
So that means if something came up here, you'd have to wait till the next meeting to authorize it to go ahead.
Exactly.
Right. At the worst case, we have a 2 week lag. Often it would be.
But I would vision these that as being a clear issue that could happen, no doubt about it. I think it's not going to be as frequent as one might suspect, because if there was just a reporting requirement would solve that issue when the committee is initially formed or directed by the board. None of this is perfect. I want to make sure that I'm not here to say there's a smooth answer to this. On the other hand, if you want to give the ultimate flexibility for a meeting with these committees, then they would be truly standing committees as here. You could post your own agendas, just be aware that the meeting is subject to the Brown Act. In other words, your meetings have to be typically within the area of the jurisdiction. There are exceptions, you know, if there's meetings outside, and you have to post your agenda, and public comment would only be on the item that the standing committee is actually meeting to discuss.
Mrs. Worsen, you.
Yes, excuse me. In the past, ad hoc committees were, the public could attend.
I attend very few ad hoc committee meetings, but I just want to make sure that when we take a look at this, that everybody has a clear understanding what a standing committee, how a standing committee operates as what is, on this flow chart, and how an ad hoc committee functions differently.
Okay. Well, in the ad hoc committee that may be coming to Director Worsen's mind is the, before I came on board, but the water resources issue, where the committee included members from other groups in the community, and I think that was something that triggered a higher level of notification and public meeting than the way we've been treating our typical ad hoc meeting. Maybe that's it. But I know on the standing committees, to me it sounds like notification anymore is relatively a painless process for us, and we can post, but there is we've got an open meeting and folks of the anybody in the public can come, and then we develop minutes. That is a bit of an administrative process.
You know, a standing, basically, let me just bring one other distinction. An ad hoc committee, you can meet at your house, your residence, there's some flexibility that goes with that. Where a distinction it would be is that a standing committee would obviously have to, the most logical place would be to meet here.
Mr. Wynn.
If I may, I heard two things that rang bells on it, so I need to have some clarity on this. The two committees here that I see would be problematic would be the Santa Maria Supplemental Water and/or annexation, and the other is parks, two parcels in the Old Town. In the parks meetings, it seems to me quite likely that we would get a call from, say, Chuck Stevenson or somebody saying, we'd like to meet with you in Supervisor Shajian's office to discuss doing this. The meeting would be held in San Luis Obispo. It would be outside of our jurisdiction. We would not control the agenda. We would be responding to them. So you're saying that would almost have to be an ad hoc committee. I mean, or vice versa, if you're meeting in Santa Maria.
Right, right. So that would be, that's the, it just shows you the flexibility, how they differ. You're right, okay. That in that context, and maybe in that context, an ad hoc committee would be the better one, saying, you know, on the project, on that particular project, should be an ad hoc committee that would have the responsibility of let's just say the charge was review ongoing negotiations on that and report back to the board. I'm just picking these out of the hat, so just say April 27th. Okay. At that meeting, report back to the board, and at that time the board could make a determination as to whether or not that's fine, there's no further instructions, or there are further instructions to report back to the
now,
board.
Then my second question with that is, does it have to be a date specific?
I think it has to, you have to have a date to report back to the board.
In other words, you can't say, please meet with them as soon as you can arrange a meeting them and reply back to us as soon as you've met.
First of all, I think an ad hoc committee can report at any time under our typical agenda item. Because we do have committee.
We do have committee.
So you'd throw out a 90-day number to stay legal, and then you'd report sooner if you met sooner.
I think you could legitimately say report back to the board within at a regular meeting within the next 90 days.
Okay.
I think that would.
Okay. But then maybe if you could sort of then possibly the best way to handle this is that these would then become ad hoc committees.
Yes.
On the agenda, we would make the necessary inclusions to have them on an ongoing basis on the agenda to monitor, meet, whatever, with the appropriate personnel and report back it. And at that point in time, the agenda is made up, put some specific date on there, and just have it as an ongoing thing.
Well,
and that would allow more flexibility.
If the committees aren't suspended between instruction, between tasks, then I think you're back into the perpetual jurisdiction issue, which would then convert them to a standing committee.
So it's then quite possible that some, like the Finance Committee, which meets only really a couple, three times a year, then that would be a suspended, whereas the Supplemental Water, once that starts going, that would be a true standing type committee. Although, you know, if and I've already got a glitch on this that I handed out, when Ed and Mike meet with Cannon up in SLO or whomever is the engineering firm, I don't see that is going to be a posted agenda.
Maybe it's just not a committee.
They're just meeting there to go over the progress issues, so on and so forth.
We're going to get into a real fuzzy area here because the Brown Act isn't a cookbook. It's just that covers every little item. But on the other hand, it's not a violation of the Brown Act for two board members to meet with whomever because you don't have a quorum of the board. What we're looking at here is committee assignments. And so the issue is if you, in my view, is that if you are going to form committees to function either on an ad hoc basis or a standing basis. You just have to kind of realize the distinctions between them, that if you want to have a standing committee, you know, they need to have, you know, comply under the Brown Act. If you want them to be ad hoc committees, you need to have them designated as ad hoc committees. And if the issue comes up is, I want to meet with two directors, or maybe you just, the president just says at the next meeting, I'm, you know, we had this request and I'm instructing these two board members to meet. Is it cumbersome? Yes. I mean, I'm not trying to argue that this is a smooth, it's well thought out process. I just want to bring it to your attention what the distinctions are.
It sounds like Michael and I need to get together and go through each of these and determine which would be the most applicable classification.
I guess my question still is, what constitutes a meeting of the committee members? Do they have to reach, deliberate on something and reach some decision, or can two of these committee members go somewhere and meet with somebody like Cannon just for an informational meeting and not reach any conclusions or give any directions?
That's a good question. Typically, committees, and it's really clear under the law, committees have no ability to commit the district to anything. Okay. Committees can develop a recommendation to the board, you know, regarding a particular item coming up. After you have your public comment and your discussion, typically what I have seen in other agencies is what's reported back is the so-and-so ad hoc committee unanimously recommends this particular course of action, or unanimously don't approve or think that this is the way it should go, or there was a split. I've seen many times when these committees come back, they say, you know, there was a split. And then the board gets to ask them, what was the rationale for the split? I mean, what was the distinction between the two contrary points of view, and where was their unanimity? Hmm. From that perspective, it's flexible. You don't have to take a vote at an ad hoc committee. You can just compose a recommendation or a split recommendation or
no recommendation.
No recommendation. Or no recommendation.
Anyway, I guess Michael and I, we need to figure out which would be the most applicable category for these to operate under. And adjust the agenda to some degree.
Well, what do we do in the interim if we want to meet or do something?
Well, we've been pretty lax on it up to this point in time.
Well, the reason I asked the question, I think that we're coming up on a administrative draft CEQA document that, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. a committee might want to review with the writer. Mm-hmm. Is that a meeting or is that an informational?
Well, no, I think that would be if the idea was that that they were going to form as a committee and come back with a recommendation to the board, it's clearly a committee. But I mean, you can't.
But I don't see that. I see this as an informational meeting where these two members sit with the writer of the CEQA document just to get a clarification and understanding of the document.
Right.
Not make any recommendations.
Then that's not a committee meeting.
Okay.
So, okay.
Because the difference is, the distinction is that assuming that it's just an informational discussion, your CEQA consultant can meet with two members of the board, one member of the board. The committee concept doesn't apply to that, but you just sort of have to remember that all of the board members more or less have equal access to meet with the CEQA consultant to get that understanding. But it's not, the idea of that isn't that you're going to sit there and say, well, you're not going to discuss recommendations or propose just informational items. That occurs all the time.
Okay, that adds a little clarity to this mess.
Well, there's very little clarity in it, but offer you that clarity.
Mr. Wynn, please.
I would suggest then that we designate Santa Maria Supplemental Water and the Parks Committees as standing committees. I don't think we want to come back every 2 weeks and tick it over again and have little reports. If I'm understanding council correctly, if it's purely informational, these people could go anyplace, as can all the other people in the board.
Right.
But if they call a meeting in order to come to conclusions, in order to make a recommendation, that would be a public meeting. And I think both of these could reasonably include members of the public and have some discussion before we came back to the board. The others, I think, could be ad hoc pretty simply.
Right. I hope I'm not confusing you. I think that any members of the board can meet with any other member of another local agency at any time, as long as you don't have a quorum there present, to gain information or to gain insight on any item of interest to the district.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Seitz. With all of this discussion that has transpired, is there any member of the public, open it for public comment, any member would like to comment on this particular item? And there's a correction to make in assignments too. I blew it last night. Then seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. The correction that needs to be made is the Santa Maria Supplemental Water slash annexation. The other member should be Mike Wynn and not myself. And then with that.
So what have we decided? Did we decide something?
I think we decided that these should then be recategorized such that the Santa Maria Supplemental Water slash annexation and parks, two parcels in Old Town, should be standing committees, and the others should be ad hoc committees.
We don't vote on it. That's just a fact now.
I think it's for further board discussion. I think that the board can agree or disagree, you know, to affirm or disaffirm the action. The Brown Act would just clearly state that if you were to set a meeting schedule, you've clearly made it, you know, whatever it is, bi-monthly, monthly, then it would be a standing committee. So if the board wants to take action to say it, to confirm the recommendations of the president that, or Mr. Wynn, that these two are standing committees and that these other will function as ad hoc committees and that they will only take action at the direction of the board and they will report back to the board. In the meantime, they're suspended. Mm-hmm. I think that's appropriate.
I think I would like to move that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Eby.
And I will second that.
And we have a second from Mr. Wynn.
And Donna will write that down.
I like things when they're such, they're so concise and well said from a legal standpoint. Donna, could you, after you write this down.
She's got it down verbatim.
Director Eby.
Yes.
Director Wynn.
Yes.
Director Worsen.
Yes.
Yes. And I will revise this and get a clean copy in electronic format to Mr. LeBrun so he can.
And then we'll break it up according to the motion and the vote of the board. And I thought what would also be helpful here is I'll add a little, just a paragraph with John's help, is the characteristics of each of these committees so that we've got a little guidance as we move forward to make sure that we're hitting the.
Yeah, it might be nice if you put in there what triggers the making it a meeting that needs to be
noticed and reported on. Mm. We'll do it.
Good.
Thank you. Moving on to item number E2, our urban water management plan. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. Today is an opportunity for open discussion and comment on our draft urban water management plan. As the directors understand, we've presented the draft plan at our December 12th meeting. we made that plan available and announced that broadly that the draft plan was, is available, made it available in multimedia formats, if you will, including posted on our website. That posting actually occurred on December 14th. As the staff report lines out, I've got a little update here. Second paragraph, I indicated no to date, no written comments, and that was true of the date I wrote the staff report. However, we have now received two written comments that I've become aware of. One is from Ed Eby, customer of the district, and I forwarded that to the directors here today, and also to our urban water management plan consultant project manager, Meredith Clement, who's with us here today. Meredith will have a brief presentation and be able to address some of the, Mr. Eby's comments, and also have then we'll have an opportunity to discuss other comments and questions with Meredith here shortly. And other than that, we received a fax yesterday from a group called the San Luis Obispo Coast Keepers, and they have requested an extension of the public comment period for 30 days. However, I thought at this point, the letter from the Coast Keepers, their letter indicates that they thought we were taking action today. Of course, we are scheduled to adopt in public session at our meeting on the 25th. And so I will give the author of the letter a call back, let them discuss the particulars of our adoption schedule, and I believe we can take written comments. Right now our written comment period is scheduled to close on the 12th of this month, tomorrow. However, we can take written comments right up to the 18th, and I can still get those onto the agenda and discuss those and evaluate those in my staff report to the board. And then, of course, we can take verbal comment at our adoption hearing, and we expect to. So I'll have that discussion and report, let the board know what the results are. But I'm hesitant to extend a public comment period here for additional 30 days. I think in many ways our draft report, our draft update is meeting our goals of the update, and I think for that reason we should move forward and recall that of course the plan is it's a live living document and will be updated on a 5-year schedule at the most. We can of course consider updates to this plan at any time in the future as elements of our planning of the planning document might change. Present change.
Do we know who these people are?
The San Luis Obispo Coast Keepers, their insignia says environment and public interest, and it's a group that comes out of San Luis Obispo, and the letter is signed by a Mr. Gordon Hensley of San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper. He doesn't have a title here, so that would be that. And with that, then, I'd like to introduce Meredith Clement again with SAIC, our project manager, and Meredith has a presentation for you. And see if I can't get her slides up here.
Second to last bullet, I guess, is now incorrect, though
We have now received public comments on the draft urban water management plan, and we currently have the adoption hearing scheduled for January 25th. And the steps to moving forward to the final urban water management plan need to be resolved the remaining questions on the draft, the public draft we currently have available, and update and edit the text analysis where necessary. We have to do a few things to make a, even if we want to take the public draft exactly as is, which I'm not saying we're not supposed to do, but we'd have to add a few things to it. We have to have the adoption resolution prepared. We have to update section 1.12 to talk about what we did in terms of public and agency coordination, who commented, things like that. We have to update Appendix A, which is our review sheets. We had a lot of to be included in final because we couldn't do it at the public draft stage. And we have to talk about our commitments to making the final urban water management plan available for review and things like that. We have to prepare a submittal package to the Department of Water Resources. We have to attach a few resolutions that are, and we have to prepare to submit it to the, you're supposed to send it to applicable cities and counties, and the applicable cities or counties are ones to whom you serve water, so it'd be San Luis Obispo County in your case, and the State Library. And you have to provide, and Don and I have talked about, the proof of public hearing, the adoption hearing. So I think we're on board for that. And within 30 days of the Urban Water Management Plan adoption, you have to submit it to the Department of Water Resources, San Luis Obispo County, and the State Library. And I have all those addresses available. And you have to have the document review for perpetuity during normal business hours.
Question on that. I notice that it still says submit to the DWR. Has there been any change on the state side in this procedure? Specifically, is there any time when they respond back to us, or do they simply drop it in a file someplace and forget it?
When we submit it to, that's a very good question, actually. When you submit it to DWR, they go through the review sheets, which we have as Appendix A, and they determine if it's complete or not. It's my understanding, I don't think they go through it with a fine-tooth comb, but they do check it for the major content, and they will, depending on their particular planning process at the time, any particular geography that they're looking at, they're required to report to the state legislature once a year on the implementation of certain major planning processes in the state. They'll call particular urban water management plans and read those, and they may actually even call you in the five-year period to see about your implementation, because they're preparing reports to the state legislature. But after, let me step back a little bit. After they receive your urban water management plan, they make a copy and send it to the Southern District. The Southern District of Department of Water Resources reviews it for major content. And if they find for some reason you just missed some major content, they will come back to you. And they don't say, forget it, you're out for grants or whatever. They just ask you to complete your content. So you have to respond to that. I've never seen that actually happen, but this is kind of a newer law. They may, it's always really been in effect for about the last 5 years, so you never know how that's going to go, but I've never seen it happen. But so you would have to resubmit if that were to occur, just complete the content they feel is inadequate in some way and resubmit it.
Well, the one in Santa Clarita, specifically Castaic, was not only questioned, was challenged in court and overturned.
Yeah, it was not challenged by DWR, it was challenged by members of the public. That's correct. Mm. For failure to consider closure of wells to perchlorate content. Okay. And then my last bullet here is to review and amend the urban water management plan as necessary. If you have some major change in your district that was not considered in the urban water management plan, you would need to, even before the five-year period is up, you would need to amend your urban water management plan. For example, if something changes with your supplemental water, you have all of a sudden perchlorate plume, which the state needs to show up in your district, and wells start going offline. You can't use that water. You don't have a treatment technology available to fix your water supply. You're going to need to amend your urban water management plan because it's not accurate for what you're faced with, and you have to go through the same public notification steps and things like that if that occurs, if you amend. All right, we had a few questions that I was able to throw some slides together about, and I was hoping to address. We had some questions about the cost of benefit per acre foot for the demand management measures not implemented. As you may remember, if an agency chooses not to implement a particular demand management measure, you have to go through a cost-benefit calculations to kind of justify why you're choosing not to implement it during the period of the urban water management plan. We had a question about some of the growth rates that were used and some of the water duty factors, so I'm going to go a little bit into some of that stuff. And I'm going to give a little bit of a I'm going to go into a little bit about the cost-benefit calculation. It's a pretty complex calculation, actually, and our socioeconomist did this for me, so I had to rely on them for this because it's tricky. But it has several steps to it. These are the major ones. You first identify the annual cost, and then the water savings, and the agency benefits, and other benefits. But, and I apologize. Seen a little better, but the you can see if and if you look in the I think it's on page 57 here, we identify agency costs of $4,600 a year, and some people who attempted to calculate this weren't able to do so, and I don't think that the calculation was necessarily bad, but there wasn't enough information given to get to that number. And the way you get to that number is, here, explained on this page, you have to look at your staff time administrator, the staff hourly rate, administration costs, and how many times you actually go out to do the surveys. You do 8 surveys a year, and then how much you, what kind of materials cost you have, what kind of publicity costs, and if anyone's going to share the cost with you. And so we ended up with a total cost of $4,600 a year for that. And then we got the water savings. The CII stands for Commercial, Industrial, and Institutional Water Savings. And because Napomo just doesn't have that many of those kind of accounts, we just didn't feel like it was a good priority for the district to implement this demand management measure. They had other priorities in its demand management measures. And then you just can't achieve that much water savings because there's only so many accounts to which they could be audited. And even though you could audit up to 8 a year, you run out after so many years. You've audited every single account after so many years. So we, over those 8 years, even though you get initially an average water savings per survey of a quarter acre foot a year, over time, you see it's savings decay, and our savings decay is about 3%. That's average over the state. That's a number that's been generated through many studies by the California Urban Water Use Council. And so over the period of the Urban Water Management Plan, the 25 years, that quarter acre foot per year over 8 surveys, so as 8 surveys come online, you start seeing this 25 acre feet per year, it's that initial quarter acre foot per year starts declining even as the next 8 surveys start coming online. So if you look at the very, I'm not totally confusing. If you look at the very last line here, line 6, so we have 8 surveys come online and they have this water savings, but even, so they're very strong in their first year, they're gung-ho after they have their water survey and they're saving water. But as time goes on, their technology, ages and they're not getting the same water savings they were initially, or they've changed staff, they're not as trained, they're just not as interested, or it's harder to keep up, or just interest, so they start declining in their water savings, their water use goes up. The next 8 surveys come on, and they have a good water savings result. But so it keeps going on and on, but the ultimate water savings is only 35 acre feet per year, and I think that's part of the confusion. You think you're going to get this 0.25 multiplied by 8 in perpetuity, and it isn't. It has a decay formula. It's a pretty complex decay formula if you look at the underneath line 6 there. And if you look at the agency benefits here, we show that the agency, you have some savings from the water saved. For example, you wouldn't have to purchase some supplemental water. You might have had to purchase. And this is a cost, this is the negotiated cost with the city of Santa Maria, 1250 acre feet. And then you would avoid some of the chemical treatment costs if you had to treat some water, this is assuming you took it from groundwater, because I think we're, I think the water getting from San Marino already treated some of it.
Yes.
So we're double counting actually a little bit of the benefit there. And then you might avoid some energy costs. These are all taken from some of your, I can't remember the name of the, these are actually from records you guys have, so these are your actual energy use costs for treatment and production of chemicals. And so you get a savings of like $1,405 per acre foot, but at a rate of only 0.25 acre feet per year, it's only about a savings of $351 a year. But your costs are quite a bit higher, $4,600 a year, so you don't see a good cost-benefit ratio there. And then on top of this, you have some of the participation costs, like their staff will take time to do the survey and implement it, and we get some costs from that. And if you did 8 surveys, 8 businesses participated, those businesses would incur a cost of about $4,000. And so, in gold here, I have proposed text changes to section 3.3 of the Urban Water Management Plan to make it a little more clear where some of these numbers came from. And I have to apologize to people who attempted to do this calculation without these text changes, which I think they went around and took it.
That would have made it easier.
Yeah, I think sometimes things were per survey or total. Mm-hmm. In that, and it wasn't there from the write-up, and Michael and I went over it, and I said, oh, yeah, you're right, you never would have known the write-up this without these text changes, and I hope
yeah.
make it quite a bit clearer.
Because it wasn't clear whether it was all users or per user.
And it wasn't clear if, at this point in the calculation, the depreciation rate didn't apply, too. Mm-hmm. So that makes it was making it quite challenging. So I'm hoping these text changes address that issue.
Meredith, if I may cut in, I think the text changes they look much better on the computer, laptop, and on my desktop this morning when Meredith forwarded me this presentation.
Yeah,
So, and along with the calculation notes in the last few slides, I don't think we had a good opportunity to be able to see those and review those. But what we can do, and it's nice, I mean, we have our adoption, of course, coming in 2 weeks, is I'll make copies of these slides and make sure that they get forwarded to the board so you can see the consideration. And I think that the message here is that the calculations within the report were correct, but the text wasn't enough description
right.
given to allow the reader to follow or to come up with that calculation on their own.
Yeah, that's one of my written
right. comments. So that's the change that we're suggesting is to make a change in the narrative so that the reader can, you know, reasonably follow through, come up with a calculation, and end up with the numbers on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll make sure that
that would be great.
We get copies of all this, and we can just as Meredith has done here, is to highlight that kind of track changes, show the changes explicitly to the text. Thanks, Meredith.
Yeah,
that would be good.
It's that lovely water background that's coming.
Yeah, we need to change that to shocking orange or something.
Yeah.
This looks better.
It must have looked. It looked okay on my projector, but you never know with distance and things kind of change some of things. But all right, and then we also have questions about the rationale behind using the 2.3% growth rate, and it's a very good question because it's something. The kind of two major things. You know, first, start with the water management plan. We'll look at one of the larger factors, and the second is the growth rate you're going to apply. And in the POMO, it's particularly difficult because this agency's the history of this area is not necessarily its future because of the various actions by San Luis Obispo County in terms of adoption of the growth management ordinances, both countywide and community specific. So it was something very considered to use the 2.3% growth rate, and we started with 2.3% growth rate, and I think as we started, the county did adopt a 1.8, so we took it down half a percentage based on, as you guys pointed out, traffic and water. They call it the resource management system that the county has in place, listed those two items as a level of severity 3.
The real history was that the Napomo Community Advisory Council asked for it to be dropped to 1%, and in response to that, they compromised at 1.8%. But it was the NCAC that asked for that downward cap, and the NCAC based theirs primarily on traffic. They were more concerned about traffic than they were about water.
But to add to what Mr. Eby's just said, mind you, that's a cap on non-exempt growth,
right.
Whereas we have to deal with all growth.
All growth, which
so
is
1.8
affordable.
Non-exempt growth probably translates into 3.5 real growth. Hmm. So I would hate to see a number that low unless we qualified it by saying non-exempt or some other.
I can say, looking at the EIR the county currently has out for the growth management ordinance, about half of the building permits are exempt.
Yeah,
it's,
right.
It's a shockingly high number, actually, to me. I was really surprised when I did that research. Well, let me go into why I still kind of like the 2.3. But, of course, this is a board decision. The 2.3, if you look at the resource management, every year the county in November puts out their resource summary for the year and where they think things are going and how things. And the one they put out this November, and this is where they list their level of severity, they talk about water and traffic as being level of severity 3, and they talk about, per their estimation, and I don't know if these are optimistic, but they do talk about the three roads they identify as being problematic are Teft and Highway 101 intersection, Los Barros, and Halcyon Road. And they specifically identify that they expect shoulder widening and left turn channelization and the intersections on Los Barros to be in repair and good operating order and the level of service to be improved on Los Barros in the next 5 years. They talk about Halcyon Road realignment project scheduled for construction already, so I guess its design is ready to go to start 2007. And they say, and I don't know that there's a design for this, I couldn't find it when I looked, or even a CEQA document for it, so this may be optimistic, but they say they have the planned improvements for Highway 101 will be in place by year 2010. So we also expect supplemental water to be ready by 2010. So, with that in mind, I think 2.3 is a good growth rate for definitely the year after 2010. And then knowing what we know about exemptions from the growth management ordinance, I don't think 2.3 is ridiculously high, even for a low end. Since we've started this urban water management plan, there's a Senate bill, 1087, that's come out about Flores. And Senator Flores is pushing for affordable housing. And it says specifically that you cannot, in your urban water management planning process, take any actions that are considered, I might be wording this a little strongly, discriminatory against affordable housing. You must account for affordable housing in your urban water management planning process. And I'm not saying if we were to drop to 1.8, we'd be giving the impression that we didn't account for affordable housing, but since it is a specific thing that is exempt from the growth management ordinance, we do lean that way a little bit by going to 1.8, because it is. So, did I lose you there?
Well, legal counsel can correct me, but as I read SB 1087, it doesn't say that affordable or low-income housing is exempt. It merely says that the growth management ordinance must account for and allocate resources for such housing.
I'm sorry, I think I misspoke. That is what SB 1087 says. It says you must account for it. I'm saying if we go for something very, very low, we may not be accounting for things that are exempt.
Well, my objection to the 2.3 instead of the 1.8 was not because of the value of the number. It was because of the comment that I read in here that 1.8 would bumped up to 2.3 just because of water improvements. And although water is very important, it's not the center of the universe. And that indicated that the whole 1.8%, that comment at the end of the, indicated the drop to 1.8% was because of water alone. And I just wanted it to be known that it wasn't because of water alone, because once the water problem went away, that doesn't mean it's going to go up to 2.3, because you still got the, people can't see water. They aren't screaming about water, but they can see traffic, and that's where they're screaming, and they'll keep screaming until that, they'll keep screaming to keep it at 1.8 until the traffic situation improves. So it was that comment on the center of the world being water that I objected to.
I apologize, but it is kind of
my yeah, but since the growth rate impacts our water need calculations, I would rather err a little on the high side. And if we come in under that growth rate high side, then we're a little better off from water demands. So I think I'd rather keep it, I guess that would be called conservative, rather than, I think the 1.8 would be very optimistic. The other thing is we're seeing more and more is the commercial mixed use development, which includes residential. Those are also exempt because they're commercial slash mixed use. So, yeah.
Partial.
So.
Only the commercial portion is exempt.
Well.
If I may, President Verheyen.
Because, yes, Mr.
I think there's been some very good discussion, and what we're trying to define in the overall document is a range of water demands, and hopefully within that range is where we will land in the 5, 10, 15, and 25-year horizon. I think it becomes maybe less likely as we get further out that we're going to be able to hit in that range, but it's important for us to do our best work in planning, defining the range, and then the work becomes find the water to water the range, and we look for the high end to make sure we're able to meet the growing needs of the community. So I think what I'm hearing is as far as this the low end, the low bookend of our range, I think there's some good discussion and some reasonable discussion to maintain a 2.3, but some need to revise some of the text where we talk about what took the 2.3 down to a 1.8, recognize that the county could hold that 1.8 for years, but in, and then recognizing that the exemptions to the 1.8 still give us cause to look at a higher number for a low end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd rather have that kind of scenario. Mr. Wynn.
I can say this, that I've been attending all of the housing meetings at the county's holding on planning, and it's true that they are lowering their number, but they're increasing the categories that are exempt,
right?
And specifically they're talking about exempting all mixed use, they're talking about exempting all lower income housing, they're talking about exempting all trailer parks, and there's a whole range of things, so that the number of exemptions going up means the number that goes down means less and less. And basically, it looks to me that the trend is going to be that there will only be a cap on really nice houses. Mm-hmm. And everything else is going to be carte blanche.
Yeah, the real high-end ones will have the cap on them.
It's my understanding, and I have to admit, I didn't try to exactly go back and reproduce their numbers. I don't have exactly the same data that they had. They used the 1994 data, expansion, the 1994 2000 DWR report, data that the district reported to DWR to develop their water duty factors. I used the Boyle water system master, wastewater and water system master plan of 2001, which uses 10 years of production and consumption data to do. So they both use, one uses 6 years of data, one uses 10. So I decided that the Boyle report was a little more appropriate for a couple different reasons for what I was doing. I like the longer time frame of the data. And also, well, let me go to the slide. But there's two methodologies, and the first one is what the LAFCO data used. And they took the total water use and they divided it by population to get per person water use. And it's a very good rough estimate, I mean, especially for a community such I think is where your population is probably what mostly drives your water use. It's not a good methodology if you're like Las Vegas, where visitors drive your water use, or businesses. If you have like a sake plant show up and one guy runs it, well, that one guy's water use doesn't appropriately reflect, you know, the water use of the whole district. It's not the best methodology for an urban water management plan because I needed to use, there's very, very specific requirements in an urban water management plan. For example, I needed to break out very, very specific categories by zoning. I needed to break out specific categories by land use a little more in detail than LAFCO needed to do. And I needed to also break out things like system loss. And when you just divide total use by population, you've accounted for the, you've kind of attributed system loss to the person. You've accounted, for example, large users in that calculation too. So you might have accounted for example, the person's water use at home. You've accounted for this person's water use in their home and their business in one number. I couldn't do that. I needed to account for them, their home and their business in two different places, the way I had, because I had to do a calculation for home and a calculation for business. So I couldn't do that for my first methodology. And then I needed also this third category of system loss, which DWR specifically asked us for. So if I had done a more of a lump number, just divided by population, I would have attributed some of the numbers, for example, like 50% of Napomo's water use is large users. I would have attributed some of that water use to the individual person, and I would have attributed some system loss to the individual person. And system loss, and particularly in some of the earlier years, like 94 through 2000, was higher than it is today. I think it's been reported as high as 22%. So that wasn't the best methodology for how many small little detailed categories I needed to use. And I was afraid if I used that first methodology, I'd account for someone's water use multiple times at their home, at their business, and in their system loss. And I didn't want multiple counts sometimes. So that's why I used the second methodology, whereas I used a water use by sector using the historic consumption records from the Boyle report.
The problem I had was I could take the LAFCO model, multiply the 232 gallons per person times population and come up with our current usage. And I couldn't use yours and do the same thing because I didn't have the breakout of how many were single family, how many residential, multifamily. And all I was asking for is, can you take your, the method you used, which was like 175 gallons per person per day in certain categories, multiply those times the properties that use that kind of, or are that kind of zoning and come up with the current usage. Can you do that ground truth?
Yeah, actually we can. And I actually, this was one of the points I wanted to bring up. One of the things we do when we're preparing a water management plan, and you don't see these spreadsheets, but we have these big backup spreadsheets where we actually, we mostly report in the urban water management plan by 5-year increments, but the backup spreadsheets actually do by year. And we didn't see when we ran these numbers that we had this like, phenomenally weird number show up when we ran an estimate for example, for 2006, 2007, and if we back calculated for 2004, it looked pretty consistent with what your actual production is. So we didn't feel like.
Well, that was the problem I had. I had a big gap between your number of 175 and the LAFCO's number of 232, that's a big difference, and you didn't have any high spots in there to even out everything seemed too low.
Yeah, and it probably is because the businesses were removed from there, like businesses and large users have been, and when you average crossings, some of the large get pulled in with the small and you're averaging across, so. Yeah, another way we kind of check these things is we look like agencies to see if our numbers look like their numbers, to see if that's another way of ground-truthing when we do that. And DWR, Department of Water Resources, produces reports on this area periodically about consumption they just do like samples every now and then, and we check against their sampling data to see if we're just...
Well, I think we're a little unique in Nipomo, and I was more concerned is how does it compare to our usage here?
No, well, since we used actual production consumption records, we didn't just come up with these numbers. They're actually based on consumption records from your district. So, to the extent possible, there's a few land use categories that are coming up that are new to your, so we had to use like agencies for those. I think there's only one category like that, like industrial, for which there's no example records available. Mm-hmm. And that's one of a tough one, because an industrial facility that produces microchips and uses water etching uses none of water. And an industrial facility that produces, dirt and gravel, hardly can use quite a bit less water. That's a really varied category. It's a very tough one to put a number on. But, so sometimes it's worth, you can even go to a third methodology, which is impossible to do in a water management plan, but if you're looking at really site-specific things, you can go look at specific meter records for a specific parcel, but we would never finish your one-minute plan. So,
if I may interject, the difference between, and again, that LAFCO process that comes up with a 232 and in our process that comes up with a 135 or 175 per capita, again, the 232, as Meredith has outlined, includes the overall community, commercial and also water losses. So that's why that number's higher per capita. But if you took our 175 per capita, multiplied by, and then added in system losses, commercial, industrial, we should come up to our demand numbers. And it sounds, and be able to ground truth by showing that the methodology that we've used to project forward does give us a number. I think that's what
That's all I was after.
Right, Director Zeevy's looking for. And it sounds like that's information that is available then.
We have these spreadsheets that do go by year, and you can sort of look at the trends and see. I would mention if you go ahead and do this, you will see big jumps in the district's water demands, for example, in a year when there's an annexation, though. So I would warn you, if you go look at these, all of a sudden you'll see like, whoa, there's a big jump in this year, and it's because we assume you've annexed something.
Can SAIC then provide maybe just the first years? In other words, was it 2006 the first year you model?
That's right.
So we can look at a 2006 number, yeah. and look at 2006 through 2010 in some detail. It would be, I think, beyond detail that's needed in the report, but to be mm-hmm. able to provide that detailed information to the board might be helpful here.
Yeah, that'd be nice to have.
Mm-hmm. And I've contacted both the county, and it seems that John Hand is working for the county on a
consultant.
A consultant back or something. Yeah. So he may be the person who writes a letter. Hopefully, I'm looking to both the county and to LAFCO to give us something in writing. Hopefully, positive. I haven't heard from them either. Either in the positive or negative, in writing on our report. So, hopefully, we'll have that piece of information for our adoption hearing on the 25th. Because I think it's a real important goal of this project, as we all know, is to provide a planning tool for the district to then have a common planning tool to work with LAFCO and the county planning agency to plan the water supply and the ability to meet the water supply for this community as the planning department goes forward. And we also know that, just LAFCO's conditions of approval for our annexation specifically called out that they wanted the board to undertake an update and have that update done by you know, an accredited engineering firm, not done in-house. LAFCO was, LAFCO and County Planning were involved in this process and brought into this process all along, and including from the get-go, where LAFCO had had the early approval. I don't know if the board recalls this, but before coming to the board with the recommendation for SAIC to produce this update for us, I went to LAFCO and had assurances from LAFCO that SAIC and their project manager and engineer, principal engineer behind the project, Mr. Bob Beebe, were acceptable to LAFCO. So I will follow up with both those agencies and look for something in writing. I think that would really help and make sense at this point also.
I don't have, this is my last slide, but were there any other questions you guys wanted to ask me?
Oh, I had a bunch of little clerical things out there.
Yeah, I do
and I don't
also.
Know, but we don't need to discuss that now as long as you saw them.
They're rather small stuff.
Right, and I have Director Eby's, and as does Meredith already, but anybody else who has, and I know every time we read something, you know, we find those kinds of edits, and we want this to be as clean a document for the 25th as we can have.
I do have some questions that weren't in my other questions that just came up, and these are more philosophical than anything, and it was when I was looking into the multiple dry years. You had the first year where we were allowed to mine the water because it was just 1 year. But then in the...
What page are you on?
Well, we can start on 62.
Okay. In case other people want
to... But you don't really need to read the words to understand what I'm asking. What's your philosophy here is to cut back, not the first year, but on the second, third years of multiple dry years. And I just wondered, you know, it's probably the right thing to do, but do we have a rationale for cutting back, or how much we cut back, or what are we basing the amount of cutback on?
Well, there's a lot of studies that show you can get a population to cut back in a couple ways, but you can't really demand, especially now that there are what they call infiltration of water savings devices in homes through the Uniform Plumbing Code and other county and state laws and things like that. You can't, there's a lot of studies on this, you can't get a particular urban population you can't really achieve really high conservation for a very, very long time, maybe 2 years, and you never really see it greater than 30-40%. So I didn't oppose... Yeah,
my question was cutting what wasn't cutting back on use. My question was, you had the supply reduced, saying we would pump less water. What did you base, what was the rationale for how much you cut back on the
pumping? That's a very specific methodology imposed by DWR, how you do that. You look at your, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. You look at the precipitation and what, so there's two caveats to this. The way we did it, and this may be changed by the you're currently in a stipulation agreement in the court, and you know, this whole Santa Maria groundwater litigation, and that would be actually a cause that would cause you to amend your urban water management plan. If something did change, then rather than what we assumed here in this urban water management plan, that would be a cause for you to amend your urban water management plan. We assumed that your pumping would be, groundwater typically doesn't respond to precipitation in the first year. It doesn't always immediately respond to precipitation. It takes a little while. And you don't necessarily even know until the partway through the year that you've hit a drought, unfortunately. So typically in the first year, you wouldn't respond. In the second year, you realize, okay, last year we were dry. So that's kind of one, that's why you don't see it in the first year. In the second year, you start taking action based on your previous year and incoming year's precipitation, and so there's a specific methodology where we related your precipitation and, over both this the Napoma Mesa area, and we set the valley basin aquifer, and we set it at 300 ever, maximum pumpage ever, to protect other users. and we also reduced its use proportionally to rainfall also.
So it was the, what you're reducing there is based on a prediction of the rainfall reduction?
That is correct. It's a repeat of the hydrologic record. And we did assume your supplemental water from Santa Maria, it stays pretty consistent. They have a larger groundwater source, and they also receive state water permits, so they're a more consistent supply. Their reliability is a little bit high.
The other problem that we have with this is a matter of vocabulary, and it continues to be a problem. I don't know if there's anything we can do about it on a local level. DWR continues to use the word supply to mean how much water you pumped. And in fact, if they pumped 10% of what's actually underground, they don't report on what's underground. That what's actually there is not what they the numbers are. It's strictly how much they pump.
Yeah, now, it's a confusing term because now let me, that could be what you're saying on top of and what you're sharing with others. And,
let me finish. Because when we updated then the county's water master plan, and we did the one for this area, WPA 6, we tried to get the county to use a real supply number, such as you folks developed for us in the court case. They simply said, if they start using vocabulary different from the DWR, their reports were not going to match and they'd be in trouble. So the county also is using the word supply, meaning how much they pumped. And I think it would be helpful, since this is a public document and it's intended to be educational in some sense, that there be a definition here saying the word supply is not what you intuitively think it should be, how much water is there. The word supply here is used in a special sense, meaning the amount of water we anticipate being pumped. But now, I'm not trying to give you the exact script. You read it the way it makes sense. But I think people who read through this think that in the second year, you've only got 1,310 acre feet or whatever it is there. And in reality, there may be five times that or 10 times that. We're just not going to pump it.
That would be my understanding also.
Any other questions from staff or the board for Meredith?
That's not allowed.
Or Meredith. Any questions from Meredith for the board?
We're actually wondering, for adoption, if you choose to do so on the 25th, what is the agency's policy? Do we just decide, do you need to have a separate document in front of you on the 25th? Or can we just decide the certain changes to the draft? Or what is the board's policy with that?
I want a document.
I would like to see a fully up-to-date document with all the typos corrected, the extra verbiage that was put in, and so in such a manner that we have a chance to read it prior to the meeting, because that then becomes goes into my library at home. I'm sure other folks.
And I think with the changes in the magnitude, and Meredith can stop me if I, that we're talking about, that's very doable. And I think that what will help further and what we can provide is a sheet of changes that are made, not an errata sheet wouldn't be the correct term, but a sheet to show specifically what changes. Because we'll be handing you a document that looks a lot like this, and you'll say, no, what was those changes? And then we'll have a sheet that goes with it.
Have a change sheet to show you exactly
what was changed between this document and the one you'll have in your hand. We'll, I think, have limited production. Mm. In other words, this would be like a second draft. It would be something that we wouldn't go into great production on, because assuming then that on the 25th we'd be able to adopt the document, then what we do is basically change, pull draft off and make the and do the production run on the final document.
Yeah, we can't call it the final until we have the actual adoption resolution and things. We actually, unfortunately, until you do the adoption, we can't produce the final.
Right, so we don't want to produce too many of these near finals. Yeah. But now I'm seeing
Mr. Wynn. And then
Mr. Eby's been very kind to turn out some comments today, and we're sort of saying we'll take them along and do with them. I don't agree with some of them, and I would hate for you just to take this away and incorporate them without us discussing them. I agree, of course, with most of them. They're very sensible. But a couple of places, for example, page 19, second to the last, saying is to be purchased as opposed to is contemplated to be purchased. It may be true that the stipulation says is contemplated to be purchased, but we as a policy are committed to purchasing this water, NCSD. Mm. And I think we should leave the verbiage alone.
On that one, yeah.
It doesn't mean we're just thinking about it. It's what we're setting out to do.
We have made a decision now. Maybe some other board in the future comes along and changes that decision. But that's, at this point in time,
and then
we are committed to that.
The next comment, page 26, 2.3.1, says the rationale was that the NCSD did not derive or make a finding on safe yield. That's not so. As you know, we hired SAIC to make such findings and come up with the deliberation, which were entered into the court case in Santa Clara.
Right.
And that was done at our request and authorized by us. So we did say we developed an estimate of the safe yield, and we defended it in court. Now, do we believe that's a safe yield? Yes, but we went beyond. It's more than just an expression of belief or opinion. We had the hydrogeologists go out and do the work. So I'd hate to see us, excuse the expression, water that down.
Yeah, well, if that's true, that's fine. But the only place I saw these numbers was in the DWR report and in the resource capacity study. Mm. I didn't see them in any.
Oh, okay, you haven't seen the SAIC report came out for the adjudication. Yeah, that has the safe fuel numbers. In
actually, I think where you're more likely going to find it, I don't want to interject here, is in Mr. Beebe's direct testimony in the transcripts, I think is where you're going to find the best example of what Mr. Beebe's opinions are. I don't think Mr. Beebe developed, this is just my recollection of many years ago, but it's my recollection he did not develop a final report to be, an expert's report to be submitted to the court. They relied on the exhibits and the testimony.
No, SAC did develop an exhibit. Exhibit C4
It's an exhibit.
It's an exhibit.
And the report never did go final. It's called the report that SAIC compiled was never taken beyond draft, and that was by Mr. Markman's direction. I'll leave it there. But we do have the exhibits. Which I don't know if the director Eby's ever been privy to.
Which were also in that same report. Exhibits were in that. I don't think you've got a copy of that report.
Well, when Mr. Markman comes next and we get briefed, that's obviously a fair thing to do. And by the way, I do want to, after having said two negative things, I do support all the other changes that Mr. Eby suggested. I think they're excellent. Particularly, I detest the term water department, which... we're a lot more than that, and to suggest that we're a water department is a pet peeve.
And then, of course, I've got a page of corrections here, of which you, my most, the one I tended to sort of was page 58. You went over that. So that's much more clear how the numbers were derived and the calculations used. So that sort of took care of that. You don't have this, but this is your copy here, Meredith, if you so want it. They're mostly spelling and typo errors and a few others in there here and there. So.
I actually wanted to disagree with the last comment from Mr. Eby. And not that I disagree with the rationale. I think the rationale is correct. But wholesalers, like supply, has a couple different meanings, unfortunately. The way it's used in DWR language, you would A wholesaler is something like the State Water Project or Castaic and its member agencies, or LADWP and its member agencies, or Metropolitan and its member agencies. Your agreement with Santa Maria is not like that. You don't sit within the City of Santa Maria's service district. So that's why those boxes are not checked.
Well, I looked at the agreement and it said...
It is confusing.
It said it's a wholesale agreement, but apparently wholesale to one person isn't wholesale to another.
Yeah, I looked at the same thing and said, oh, well, he's got a really good point. So, and also I did, so now I have a question, I'm sorry, about the Crystal Oaks development. What is the direction from the board on that?
Well, the problem is the general plan that I think you're looking at assumes that there's going to be a certain generic development there. Since that generic plan that has been written, there's a developer who has a more specific idea on what he wants to do. And he's given us an estimate of, I believe, 500 acre feet per year is what he needs for his use. And so I think that's a closer estimate than the county's original generic estimate of the type of use the property was going to be for. I just think the number he's giving us is probably closer to the truth than whatever the county envisioned 10 years ago.
I might be able to. We sat down with the developer yesterday because they are a key member of the Limited Liability Corporation, and I'll give an update to the board in my manager's report. But I can assure you that the developer doesn't know how much water they'll need right now. And their estimates, they want to be conservatively high in reserving capacity in the pipeline, and they want to stay high because they know they can always come down. I think the task or the level of criteria needed for an urban water management plan we have to point at the adopted public planning document. Now, that said, as the specific plan for this project does evolve and come through and the development plan evolves and comes through, I think two things that we should understand. One is 2-3 years possibly kind of horizon before I think they're ready to really solidly estimate the type of water they need. We will then, of course, be on the eve of adopting an update to this plan. And second, by district policy, those folks, they will do an engineering calculation based on their final demand, final development plan of how much water they need, and will be supplemental water, and it won't be our 3,000 acre feet. And the developer understands that well and clear. And so I think as far as, this report being as accurate as it can be today, because the developer, I do expect a comment either from that developer or the Home Builders Associate, actually from both. They both alluded yesterday that they would provide us written comments, and I reminded them that would be by tomorrow, hopefully. And they assured me they would, and the developer did say that they will. They'll talk about what their estimate for their ultimate water demand is. But I think it'll still have to go back to Meredith to say she'll look at that documentation by the developer, and if it's anything, if it doesn't provide the substance for the estimate, if it's just, hey, I'm going to use 1,000 acre feet out there, we can't just take that and put it in our document and say, well, he said he's going to use 1,000.
So. Yeah, it's got to be something realistic.
But his number is based on something, and my point is that all estimates have a certain inaccuracy on them, and
right.
the closer the project comes to completion, until when you're actually complete, that there's zero error.
Right.
So what I'm just saying is, we're farther along now than we were when the original document was written. You ought to use the most up-to-date information you have.
And I agree with what Mr. Eby is saying completely. It's hard to update, though, or to put a finger on what the most up-to-date information is. Because the reality of development community is it's a game of compromises, and typically a developer is going to go in with a higher I think they would really like a real higher density project, but the reality of going through the planning process is
you know, is the reality check as to what it's going to be. And so I think when you say what is the most probable number or what is the newest information, you know, until, to me, until you see a development plan proposal that is at the point of being offered to the county as a tentative tract map or as an LUO amendment or whatever it is, there is no probable number other than what's in, already in the planning documents. Because I think, as we all know, that, and we've seen this, where developers have had these, we use a word loosely, pie in the sky opportunities. I think it's a, you know, a discretionary call on behalf of the board. I would just caution the board that I think the way I understand the urban water management plan is it's supposed to be a low and a high. And
I wanted to add to what your council was saying, that what the urban management plan requires us to do is to go out and consult with the county about what projects to include. And we did that process as we were required to do, and this was not one of the projects they included. I contacted them after I received your comments yesterday, and they said this project is way too much in its infancy. Use what is still in the general plan. However, the act, I mean, the act says you are to consult with the applicable land use agency. It doesn't say you have to take their word as, you know, God's truth, but it does strongly encourage you to, I mean, that's the kind of the major purpose, is to create a dialogue with your land use planning agency. So.
I have no problem with, yeah, with you doing that, as long as you're aware of what they're doing and as long as you've talked to the county and considered them. At least you're not totally blind to that possibility.
No, I mean, it's still at the board's discretion what to do, though. I mean,
no, I wouldn't suggest that we use the developer's number. I would just suggest that we be aware that something's going on, and maybe we ought to take a second look at the old county numbers.
Well, I
which sounds like you're doing.
What I could say, what could happen is if this, what could happen is, depending on the size of this development, they could come back to you later requiring a water supply verification if they have more than 500 homes or something. You would have to go look at their water management plan and say, oh, look, we only allocated 240 acre feet. You now need 500. So now, and that makes your water supply verification process a little more complex. I will say that usually the developer has to do it anyway, so it makes it a little harder on them. That's probably why they want to avoid it now and get their project in at this stage of development. But it hasn't met the county's threshold, at least at this point, to be included, and that's why it didn't meet my threshold for the beginning.
Mr. Sainz.
Yeah, I'm just want to make sure that Meredith feels like she has adequate direction from the board on what revisions to make. So if she needs a motion or clarification or anything that, you know, we would like to get those issues resolved. And secondly, I would be interested, I think Meredith would be, is what type of presentation would you expect? I mean, we've went through this urban water management plan. It's probably our third, fourth, fifth.
More than once.
I think it's
a fourth time at a public meeting. So I think maybe some direction as to what, are there items that you would like Meredith to emphasize? I think it'd be the more appropriate area, or just let her go on her own. I just want to make sure that your expectations of what this final presentation is going to be close to what is staff actually presents.
Mr. Wynn, please.
As soon as you have your final revisions and you send them to us, I would hope that there'd be electronic copies as well, PDF forms or something like that.
Yeah, that should be fine.
Because our meeting of the 25th will be more heavily attended than what happened today. I know that the Home Builders Association are going to be sending representatives. There will be others that are sending representatives for sure. So we need to be able to send them copies in advance, not in advance of the board, but in advance of that day's meeting, so they can read over it and see what they're talking about. I think that's a courtesy we owe the public.
Again, I think the amount of change we're talking about between now and the draft document we'll consider for adoption, I would suggest that I provide electronic copies available to them, and again, the change sheet. Because I know, for instance, Representative of the Home Builders Association that was here yesterday, Mr. Bunin, and Mr. Nestor was here, who of course is a Crystal Oaks developer, they both had hard copies of that document in their hand. And so I think with the change, you know, with the change sheet idea, that we're going to be very forthwith on what our changes are. And again, they're not, we don't have anything wholesale here. So reproduction, and we can do that.
I'm not arguing for reproduction. I'm just saying electronic copies that are fully edited. I think that's meets the standard, and for most people, that's preferable.
Right. Yeah. It's just that much less paper to pile up in your office.
Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, all of my comments have been addressed. I would like to see a ground truth example of the methodology you used that does not have to be part of this, but I'd just like to see it. I'm just concerned that you consider all of the things that you're aware of all of the things that I was concerned about and hadn't considered them. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you have.
And the one item that I had of concern, which was how the numbers were derived on page 58, I think, that's been addressed. The other comments are strictly corrections and spelling and grammar and so on and so forth. So this is my one page. So I'm happy. Now, do you feel, Meredith, that you have adequate direction from the board?
I have a lot of work, but I think I have adequate direction to do it.
Okay. So, any other direction for Meredith?
And then, I don't know if we've covered specifically on adoption day. Maybe, I mean, presentation-wise, obviously.
Yeah, how would the board like to see a presentation? The time that you brought it before us, which was the admin draft at that point in time, you know, you had a very short presentation, which was very good.
The major results?
Yeah. I think it was 11 slides or somewhere around there, or maybe it was a little more. I don't remember.
By the way, if they're not, they don't have a purple background, they certainly are more visible.
If you could take that, and I love the ocean, but
just plain white paper,
such that the print jumps out at you.
There's a key thing in graphic arts called color contrast. Some colors just disappear into others. Mm-hmm. Others stand out.
I think black and blue, we had an example today that they tend to disappear into each other.
Yeah.
But the slides, looking at the content of the slides, I'm thinking, a review of the process that the district has undertaken here. I think it's important to accentuate the public process, the number of meetings that we've had leading up to then the adoption hearing and the public comment period. So a review of those time frames, and then a basic overview of the plan's objectives and how the plan meets those objectives.
Yeah.
And then, again, considering that we expect more public, we want to jump right into that as much as we can to see if there are to see if there are any new points or concerns that come up from the public that we haven't heard to date. I think really important to try to get to that as early in the adoption hearing as possible, so that again we have Meredith and the board and staff to be able to address those issues and move through them if there are any.
What do you plan on doing with Gordon's request?
I'm going to call Mr. Hensley this afternoon and express to him in his request, he says he thought today was adoption, it appears, by his request. So I want to let him know that adoption is 2 weeks out and that I could take written comments and be able to, again, consider those in the staff report up and until the 18th and again, welcome him to make comments through the 20, right up to the 25th and attend our adoption hearing. Also, attempt to find out if he's had a chance to read the report at all at this point, if there are specific areas of concern or comments he might have, see if I can get anything from him.
I'd hate to slow it down just because somebody hasn't gotten to it yet to read it. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think the other thing you might want to include in there, I think Gordon, by the way, I know Gordon, so I'm not being disrespectful, I don't use the last name. He had a comment in his letter about how long that's been posted on the web. I think just for the record, we should correct that.
Yeah.
Been on there for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Gordon is a guy that's really interested in the process. And so I think if we, this, you know, state, really this is how many times we've had it up here as administrative drafts and presentations, you know, and.
Yeah.
He understands that this isn't, you know, a one meeting approval.
Yeah, but, well, anyway, so with that, we'd like to take a short break here of about 12 minutes, return at 11:20. Mr. LeBrun, manager.
There we go. Thank you, President Verheilig. I've got some additions to my written manager's report I'd like to highlight. An update on the Holloway annexation. The applicants met with Mr. Seitz before the holiday. And negotiated a few minor changes, what really resulted in a few minor changes to our standard annexation agreement. I've gone through those changes and we've had a few iterations just back and forth, but I believe we have now a complete and agreed upon, at least with the applicant, annexation agreement. And then I expect to have that signed by the applicant, copy that annexation agreement. They tell me by the end of this week, and I told them by my agenda preparation date, which is the 18th. so we'll have that on our agenda for the next meeting for board consideration of that annexation agreement. I've also, throughout the period of time since the applicant applied initially for annexation to the board, I have been in contact with LAFCO and county planning staff. And it is LAFCO staff's position that his commission, their commission is ready to move forward with an application to LAFCO for annexation. They want to consider that. They want the board, they want the opportunity as the board to consider. And he expects a conditional approval that would be similar to the conditions that we have for our, which are lined out in our sphere of influence update. Look forward to, I think, moving through this process for the first time with the Holloways. I have also now been contacted just yesterday by a representative of the Craig development, and they want to begin the process shortly. And again, with the Board of Supervisors' decision on the 20th of December, which included a recognition of level 3 severity here for water resources in the Napomo area, I think the direction is quite clear to the development community now within our sphere of influence that mutual water companies as a method of watering new development will not be allowed, and we will see these developers now coming to the district requesting annexation for their in order to water and in some cases sewer their development plans. So I expect to see that in the coming year.
Well, as a part of staff's dealings with LAFCO on such annexations, do you plan to urge them to rethink their requirement for conservation?
On the conservation, our condition of approval for conservation is somewhat twofold. It talks about a water use per person or per connection to the district. And lowering that number by 15%, and then it talks about a program. And I made my first point to LAFCO staff on that last June when I called and reported that from June 2004 to June 2005, the district had accomplished a 12% reduction in its use per connection. And LAFCO staff kind of paused and thought, well, that's just because it's been raining so much. I said, you're exactly right. And I'm here to tell you that that is the inherent problem with the percentage that's based year to year. And then the next thing he said, well, it says program. We need to see you implement a program. And I said, I agree. 100% agree. And when we have that program in place, what we'll be looking to from LAFCO is recognition that we have a program in place and we are moving toward a 15% reduction. Not that we have to have a program and the next day we're going to have 15% reduction. So I think that dialogue's there. And again, LAFCO staff are very...
And I think the other thing that I think will be interesting, that LAFCO will be interested in, is that it's our intent to serve the entire sphere of influence with supplemental water. You might sort of recollect that they wanted us to bring in 1,000 acre feet as combined use, and of course, we're not following that precept at all. The general precept is that we're following is that all of these, the sphere of influence is going to be watered by supplemental water. Now, obviously, the molecules are going to intermix, and you know, and it's not going to be a direct pipeline out there. But that's the model that we're looking at. So the model that we're using is a little bit different than the model that was envisioned in the environmental impact report, because we're bringing in much more than 1,000 acre feet for the SOI.
But again, that was done in coordination with LAFCO staff, and that was the first thing I asked Mr. David Church, actually, who did that EIR and came up with a 1,000 acre foot estimate. And he said, well, that was his low end estimate, and he really felt that he had a couple different variations, but he did not feel comfortable in directing this board with the information he had in hand to say 1,000, you know, or to say 3,000 acre feet or something higher, especially at the time he was having a real difficult time with then management of the district to even think that 1,000 acre feet was needed for the sphere of influence or whatever. So, but he does, they were involved in our work on the urban water management plan, which is the work that substantiates the amount of water we need for our sphere of influence, and that's recognized to be considerably higher than 1,000 acre feet, depending on the potential variations that can occur as we go forward, as we've discussed just on our last item with the urban water, with the urban water management planning. We know that the best we can do is come up with a range, and hopefully that we land in that range and plan for a considerably high number so that we can meet the needs of the community as it ultimately develops.
I think the bottom line is there is room for discussion. I think that's the bottom.
Move on then. A few updates in here, and I'll assume that you can read those and will ask me questions if you have them. On the Santa Maria pipeline, we had a meeting yesterday with the limited liability corporation that is formed and preparing a proposal to this board for building of the pipeline as a much the same way that we see in many developments where off-site infrastructure is built and then dedicated to the district. So we received a written proposal, and that I shared with the supplemental Santa Maria Supplemental Water Committee, but this meeting yesterday did not include the committee members, and that's because we felt that this written proposal was drafted in the form of a reimbursement agreement by title, but really followed our reimbursement agreement standards very loosely, if anything other than by title. So it was a little early, we felt to bring in the policymakers, and I just would like to report that the meeting yesterday John and I attended, we felt was very fruitful. There were a number of issues that the limited liability group agreed right away to pull out of the reimbursement agreement. I think we had a nice broad discussion of what how the district would see any potential agreement moving forward, and really looking at what amounts to a fairly standard type of reimbursement agreement with a development entity, as standard as it can be when we're talking about a a $6 to $8 million pipeline that is going to be built substantially offsite of any development that is planned. We felt that was a healthy meeting, and we expect then a new draft to that proposed reimbursement agreement to come forward. Do we get a timeline? I know that they'll return it, but they realize that the process for us is still, we have some months still in the process before we're even ready to consider such.
And I think we can discuss a little bit more of that.
Okay.
Now,
I have called, I have not reached our CEQA consultant voice to voice. We've done some voice mail, but not voice to voice. And the update I have from him is a bit disappointing. He, as you all know, before the holidays had told January 10th would be the date that he was aiming toward for administrative draft, and felt he was well on schedule and would be able to meet that. Again, as I've described, without having the opportunity to fully understand why, he's now saying the end of the month, and included a hopefully on that. So I'll follow up. I've got a call into him. And that's Mr. Wood, of course, Doug Wood and Associates. And Will, if Cliff was here, I know what I'd be hearing is some of that, and I need to write it. And I will do that to best of my ability, and we'll provide an update to the board via an email as soon as I have something more solid for Mr. Wood as far as the date that we can expect that administrative draft in our hands. Of course, you understand then the process is we've got 30 to 45 days. We want to keep that as tight as we can, but we need the time that we need to review that administrative draft, get him comments back, and get that prepared for a draft report that we can put on the street. And then we've got there's a number of blocks of times that are required by law before we get to adoption, and we need to be ahead to adoption. That, of course, is a big trigger for a number of things, including our conditions of approval, our final contract with the City of Santa Maria, et cetera. So, disappointed to have to report that delay. I have included Utility Supervisor Dan Migliazzo provided me just a brief summary of some of the activities over the holiday period for the field staff. Fairly busy. It's amazing how many fire hydrants are hit in the community of Napomo. I don't know if that says something about our driving here locally, but any event, I will avail myself to questions.
Mr. Eby.
The Knollwood well is the only one that has a level on it. On the IPAC thing where I go look, check the level, it seems rock solid. Is that even hooked
a
up?
A solid 350.
Is that hooked up?
Knollwood was the only one. Well, it still is hooked up. It was the only one, and we had it reporting there, and we're sitting around a 269 level. What's happened now is during the holidays, and it may be summarized in this report, Knollwood, the motor on the well, due to a power excursion, fried, lack of better term. So the well had to be pulled. And when they pulled the well, we decided to also go ahead and pull the shaft, take a look at the pump, and we're going to rework the well. So that well's out of commission. And as it's out of commission, the tube that provided the air to give the signal to the transducer is also pulled out. So I said, okay, so now, and the other thing, I don't have our January well readings yet, or else I would have brought those in with a spreadsheet and at least given the manual update of what our well levels look like, because I think the directors I know are interested as I to see, to track the response to the heavy rains we've had to date. So we do have, there is one well, I believe, that is remote reporting right now. and I'm not going to be able, Sundale, I believe, but I'll have to check that. And I expect to have the Via Concha well on by the end of the week with the report, with the remote level indicating also. Because the manual reads, you know, we get one spot a month, but what I want to see is if we can start detecting any trend in response to the recent rainfalls, because Meredith even touched on this. Our aquifer's ability to respond to rainfall events is, I believe, unique, and we really needs to be better defined as to, as far as when we get rain in January, does that, do we see the response by March, or what is that lag? We know it's not a number of years, and in some areas of the state, it's a number of decades. We're fortunate not to have that type of lag, but we want to see that. So that's why it's at 350. It's just sitting there at atmosphere.
But in the SAIC studies, which were designed to be very conservative, but we were told that you'd have to have 12 inches of rain in a year before there was any change in the aquifer. And it never made good sense, and yet that was the model that we followed.
Right.
And now, I applaud their being very conservative, but with better monitoring and less of, reliance on a theoretical model, we may not be as bad off as we feared.
I'm fairly certain that we see deep recharge much quicker than at a 12-inch point. And some of that reason has to do with the fact that a percentage of our surfaces throughout our, especially overlying the mesa where it's important, we get hardening of surfaces. And when you get hardening of surfaces, and I'm talking about homes, roads, packed ground of any sort, then we get runoff, and then the runoff is directed to an area. Now, if you look at that area is experiencing, you might get an inch of rain, and that runoff basin has experienced effectively 20 inches of rain, and deep percolation starts occurring. So those types of things aren't accounted for in the standard numbers and theories that are used, and I expect also to see some better development in our understanding of the basin as we move forward with the SAIC basin monitoring plan contract. A brief update there is we, of course, received Mr. Beebe's draft proposal. What we have now back to SAIC is our standard engineering contract for their consideration. And then what we do is we bring that board approved a work plan for basin monitoring. What we want to do is package that with our standard engineering contract. So we have SAIC as we do Cannon, Wallace, and Boyle at this point under a standard engineering contract, and then use task orders in accordance with our policy for issuing task orders. So I expect to have that. I know they're anxious to get going, but that may take a couple weeks or a month to make sure that we can get. They're a bit of a different beast, SAIC. They're not our local engineering firm. We may have to work a little bit on certain indemnification clauses, but hopefully we can get them under our standard contract. That's our attempt.
Any other questions?
You did mention that you met with Cannon Associates.
Actually, I have. That I will be meeting with Cannon Associates tomorrow.
That's tomorrow.
And,
okay.
And that comes up from, we had an interview last week that I thought was really insightful and a good interview. And a point came up about funding and a funding deadline that's coming up here at the end of this month for getting ourselves on a list for Prop 50 monies. And what I'm doing here is meeting with Cannon tomorrow. We have a task order with them where they're helping us identify grants, potential grants, and low interest loans and things for our pipeline. My thought was I'll meet with them tomorrow. The objective being to meet the end of the month application deadline to get on for Prop 50 grants.
Okay. Any other questions, Stan? I have one on the. Three sewer service letters issued for existing homes?
Yes.
Were those in the prohibition zone by chance?
May have been. Again, this is existing sewer. We have existing sewer service or existing services to these homes. And for instance here, when someone replaces a mobile home in one of our mobile home parks. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The county requires them to come to us and for a will serve right.
Okay.
That's what that
is. Yeah, okay. That's committee, any public comment on the manager's report? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board, move on to item G, committee reports. Mr. Nguyen, any committee meetings under your jurisdiction?
Not really.
Okay, Mr. Eby, Mrs. Worsing?
No committee.
Mr. Verheilig? No. Seeing none, then we'll move on to, without going to public comment, we'll move on to director's comments, starting with Mrs. Worsing.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to ask staff, there's a bright light that shines on the wastewater system on Black Lake when you're driving on Willow, and I go down there a lot. Anyway, it's very bright and distracting. It's an orange sulfur light that needs to be shaded.
Yeah, it's very bright, bright. Yeah. I mean, it is bright orange.
And as it goes through the trees, it's like very...
I've noticed that also.
Yeah.
So that's something new because I haven't seen that.
Well, it is. We're struggling because I believe the comment had come before about lights at our facilities in the Midwest. And then when we simply extinguish those lights, then we have safety issues with our staff and we go out to respond to incidents.
Sure.
So we are, I know that Mr. Migrazo is working on motion detectors so that we can have the lights come on when the staff are there, or trigger safety issues, and then be able to extinguish when they're not. I will ask specifically.
Because that may cause a car accident, you know?
It may.
You never know.
Yeah,
and then, do we have a well somewhere off of Orchard?
Yeah.
The
Dana wells?
No.
Off of Orchard. Orchard? Those are coming up by off of Orchard. Not one of our production wells, and not well that we're not aware of our ownership.
Yeah, because I had, anyway, somebody comes and checks the well every morning, playing loud music, and it wakes up the neighbor. So I
Cal,
didn't.
Cal Cities.
I think Cal Cities has a well.
Okay, that's
Cal
what
Cities
I thought.
Has got
yeah.
A well out there.
Because I couldn't
Orchard,
recall
yeah,
one up there.
That is
so
their area.
Yeah.
Just wanted to ask.
Or it's a
that.
Shared area, but yeah, they do have a well out there.
Okay, I guess that's it for now. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Eby, director comments.
Oh, just yeah. I went to the Cypress Ridge. Riot the other night, a meeting the other night, and the interesting thing that came out of that was there was a weak argument made by Cypress, by the developer, that since his sewer was only operating at 30% capacity, he needed homes to fill it up, and that was one of the arguments, and he played that on to the Cypress Ridge residents too, and told them that if I build these homes and add these sewers, your sewer bill will go down. So just a caution, when you build over capacity into your system, it's definitely growth inducing. And we've got to keep that in mind if and when we build over capacity into our supplemental water.
Some points of insight I have there. That wastewater treatment plant, and it was interesting because we had a public comment today. We heard what a great plant it was. Actually, if you ask Mr. Chuck Baker, who owns Rural Water Company, that is his biggest albatross. Yeah. But there is some merit to the argument. One of the problems with that plant is that it's oversized. And I think your point is, hey, if you oversize, then that becomes an argument to grow. But one of their problems is the fact that they've got such a low flow regime to that plant. What's more important to us is Director Eby forwarded me some comments by the developer in regards to supplemental water. And he has now made a public commitment to taking supplemental water for his project for his what he called his residential portion. And I said, well, that's very nice. Glad to hear that. But I've also got Mr. Markman looking into it. It is our understanding that the golf course water is also, that's a commercial water use. And again, I've got Mr. Markman looking into this, but I believe our position will be supplemental water for your golf course, for the additional golf course, and for and we also and for the residential. And we also took the opportunity yesterday, and we heard that the developer understands this, to reassert that rural water companies' portion of the 3,000 acre feet of water that is envisioned under the stipulation is not water, is not supplemental water that's available to the expansion of Cypress Ridge. That is above and beyond. That's new development within the Mesa area, and so that's above and beyond the 3,000. And we had the heads were going up and down, so we feel that our position in regards to supplemental water and any development Cypress Ridge or other is understood there. I was appreciated that copy on that.
Mr. Wynn.
The RAC met on Wednesday, January 4th, and it met at the Ag Building in San Luis Obispo, the Ag Commissioner's Auditorium, which meant that some people got there late, but meeting went well. There was an election, and I was elected again for another year as chairman. Steve Sinton from North County will be vice chair again.
Good.
And a significant development, as you may know, Frank Honeycutt, who was the staff person tasked with the REC, was moved to another job. And so they're out looking for somebody to take his place. Pavel Ogren has stepped in and has agreed to serve for the entire year as its secretary. So that's going to give us a little better communication flow, maybe more filtering too, that remains to be seen, to the supervisors. This coming month, on February 1st, we'll meet again, and also at the Ag Building. But we're negotiating to meet thereafter in the Board of Supervisors' new building itself. And the supervisors are in favor of that. They would like to be able to drop downstairs and listen to an agenda item or two on occasion. And they can do that more readily if it's in the same place every time and it's close by. So I look forward to that, seeing that happen. Secondly, on Monday, January 9th, I also attended the meeting that Mr. Eby referred to. I'm never very clear when talking to Mr. Sullivan whether he's confused or whether he knows exactly what he's saying, but he'll say anything to get what he wants. So I don't know. He is not a water company. He has no water. He forgets that all the time. He told the people, among other things, that if they agreed to do the 150 homes, round numbers, that then their sewer bills would go down. But if they insist on only having the 30 homes, that the rural residential, that not only would their sewer bills stay high, but he wouldn't have to take supplemental water. He could feed that with the wells on the site. And so I walked up to him afterwards and said, unless you're forming a new water company, Mr. Baker has signed the stipulated settlement, and he has agreed to take supplemental water for all new growth. And he went to argue for a little bit, and then he backed off and said, no, you're right. That's it. This is somebody we're going to have to keep on a fairly short leash. And I applaud the fact that staff and Mr. Markman are keeping an eye on it, because that could go wrong easily. Yesterday, I went to the Board of Supervisors. There was nothing much of interest for South County, except I heard while driving into San Luis that they added an item to their closed session agenda, and that was the Summit Station thing. So they did meet on that. They did talk to that yesterday. In public comment prior to closed session, I simply said that I appreciate the fact they're looking at it. I urged them to continue the process forward. I thought we were going in a good direction. I did urge them to come up with meaningful area planning standards, that just expressions of goodwill were warm, but the devil's in the details, and I think they took it seriously. Next, on Friday the 20th of this month, I am going to UCLA again and taking a one-day course on land use and water policy, and it looks good. It's something that, by the way, I'd be very happy to have somebody else go down with me if you want to go down. I will leave early in the morning on that Friday, and I will come back afterwards that evening. So the first meeting's around 7:30 in the morning, so it's an early start, a late return, but they're worthwhile, and the cost of the district is gasoline, basically. So, fifth, just a question for staff, and I don't need an answer today, but it's something for you to think about. Is there any particular characteristic of Santa Maria water that we're going to be buying that might, at least in private circles, be considered a trace element? Now, I'm not suggesting adding anything foreign and certainly not anything radioactive to their water, but is there something about their water so that at future dates we could test samples in our own wells and say the water there currently is this percentage supplemental and that percentage native water? And there may not be. There may not be. But it's a question for geologists. And if you say yes, as it turns out, there's a residual from the chloramines that still hangs on in small quantities. Whatever you told me, I would listen to that. I don't need...
I think looking at... we'll take a look at it, but looking at the general mineral characteristics of the water and just... what jumps out at me right away would be the total dissolved solids of the water. We know what our supply, you know, our main supply field, which really, once we bring supplemental water on, we'll be operating our main supply field, you know, moving wells around, but out in that area of the basin. I don't see us bringing Church Well on unless, you know, we get into water emergency. So we'll know what our total dissolved solids of our groundwater is. We'll know what the total dissolved solids of the Santa Maria water is, and maybe we'd be able to calculate a relationship, and then from that relationship talk about what, you know, without great accuracy, but at least be able to give a ratio of you know, what water is at different points in the system.
I am only asking out of academic curiosity. I do not encourage you to spend much time or energy on the question. But if it turned out to have something... I would be interested. I do know, by the way, that the constituency of their own water will change periodically. So that's not a fixed constant. And last, I want to comment that I'm very thankful that this board did decide not to take on drainage powers when it was proposed energetically by the county. If Mr. Buell ends up giving us help on a number of areas, he might suggest ways that we can do this affordably. But the same three houses that have always flooded on Mala flooded again in this last time. And the solution that they're suggesting is the county, although it would have been us if we were there, need to pay $1.5 million to buy those three houses and turn it into a drainage area. This was a problem that was created by county planning, and we certainly should be thankful that we're not dealing with the liabilities.
Well, thank you, Mr. Wynn. I have some comments. I'll go through them very quickly. Don't forget, AB 1234 training is required prior to the end of this year. And since we are SDRMA member, it's only $49 hit to the district. So, you know, it's cheap. There's a session down in Goleta early February. You can register online. And then there's other sessions in the state. UCLA is offering six seminars. These are public policy programs, EIR, EISs, CEQA compliance, Subdivision MAP Act, cultural resource protection, urban design, and endangered species regulation conservation ad nauseum. Received this from Lorenzo Smith in the mail here at the district. This is a this is a course on filling out your statement 700, which we do every year, which is our statement of economic interests. Fortunately, I have none, so it's very easy to do. It's $50 a person. It's in January 31st, up in SLO, so on and so forth. The APCD issued statements on portable diesel engines, including those on tractors and so on and so forth. And on particulate matter guidelines. The American ground, the Association of Groundwater Agencies and the American Groundwater Trust are having a one-day program Monday, February 6th at the Marriott Ontario Hotel regarding groundwater things and recharge desalination of the water prior to putting it back into the recharge basin, so on and so forth. And if anybody's interested, here's the registration form on that. The National Water Resources Symposium, 4th annual, February 13, 14, down in La Jolla. So this gives you a chance to get down there. And there's a whole bunch of stuff. If anybody's interested, here's the form. It's not cheap. $700, for us it'd be $500. We're the government. If we wait after January 20th, it's $600. So there's that. And the American Water Works Association 2006 bookstore catalog. There's a whole bunch of stuff in here, CDs, electronic media, books on water management things, and so on and so forth. So these are available to anybody who wants them. That's it. That's all I have.
Especially with that last one, that catalog. We get multiple copies of that catalog, but if any of the directors look through that and see any material that they feel would be interesting, educational, the district, I think that'd be a good purchase. We could purchase it, the director could review it, we could have it available in our library. So.
Okay, well thank you, thank Mr. LeBrun. And with that, moving on to item number I, Mr. Seitz, our closed session announcement.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have 7 items on our closed session. First of all, for litigation matters, this is all pursuant to Draft Code Section 54956.9. We have the Santa Maria Groundwater Valley continuing groundwater adjudication. This is in Santa Clara Superior Court. We have the ongoing litigation with Maria Vista suing the district. We have the ongoing litigation with MCSD versus the county. This is the Sun Station litigation. Then we have the Conference of Legal Counsel. This is again pending litigation. This is CAUF, Citizens Against Unlawful Fees versus the Pomona Community Services District. Then we have two, which are actually combined, liability claims. These are all pursuant to Character Code Section 54956.95. One of the claims is Manietta Apple, and the other one is Eli Aguilar. And then lastly, we have a public employee appointment. This is pursuant to Character Code Section 54957, and this is Project Assistant to Management.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Seitz. With that, I'd like to now open it to public comment for any items in closed session. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board and we will adjourn to closed session.
We're on.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I let the record reflect that there is no audience. We did adjourn to closed session to discuss 7 items that were on the agenda. The only actions that the board did take formal action on that is reportable is items 6 and 7, and these are the liability claims. Bonetta Apple and the estate of Eli Aguilar, both of which by a 4-0 vote, which equates to being a unanimous vote, were rejected, and legal counsel was given notice to provide notice of the rejection. Then starting back up from the top, under pending litigation, we discussed the Santa Maria Valley groundwater adjudication, heard an update from legal counsel, but took no reportable action. With Maria Vista versus NCSD, again the same, they heard an update from district legal counsel, but took no reportable action. On the third item of the agenda, NCSD versus the County of San Luis Obispo, they did take informal action. I'll just report it for the general manager to contact the planning staff to discuss further further resolution. Conference with legal counsel, and this is the Citizens Against Unlawful Fees versus the NCSD. Again, we heard an update from legal counsel, but they took no reportable action. And then public employee appointment, this is Government Code Section 54957, Project to Assistance Manager. The board did discuss that position, but did not take reportable action.
Thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. And with that, we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you all for your ability to hang in there.
Yeah, I was thinking when I saw the 11 o'clock and we were done with the regular meeting, I thought,
Okay. Good. Well, you'll still keep thinking about it.
They made it sound like
Yeah.
Well, it's not. Oh, boy. We see voltage drops, but we get.
That's what I thought.
Oh, because otherwise.
This would be easy.
Otherwise, you've got to go down there and spend the night for that other thing.
I mean, you can cut the spike thread off and put it in the ground.
Right.
Yeah.
Round down.
It says, in addition, you know, requires members of local legislative.
Because the average just keeps rising.
Bridge to take 2 hours of ethics training.
As voltage drops, as I read through each of them, but.
Yeah, that's as far as I went. I thought that was fine.
I don't know what the answer. I believe it's approved.
It does not comply with ABO 234.
But their professionals, we haven't been able to keep up with it, but they just completed a multi-million dollar new feed coming up Pomeroy, and they said we should have cleaner power, less interruption, less voltage differences across the phases.
I have to reset the clocks in my house, the electric clocks, a couple times a week. So I know that this goes on constantly, and damage can be done.
Oh, yeah.
Very short period of time.
To your refrigerators and those kinds of appliances?
Well, my refrigerator monitoring motor, getting rewound last summer.
Yeah.
And this past fall, it blew up, and I had the rewind shop give us a report to show that in their opinion, it appears that it was a high voltage excursion. And, for what it's worth, then we submit that to a claim of PG&E. We haven't yet been successful with one, but what I tell them is that just submitting those claims, that gets their attention, and they will address this. They may not pay our claim, but they're going to address it.
Well, surge protection.
Mr. Blair, is we're bringing you.
Yeah, it's got to go in the dumpster.
Surge protection is a lot cheaper.
Yeah, there are motor savers on these motors.
Well, there are.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
What's the climbing time? Tiana, that's what you want to look at, because there's motor savers, but the critical issue is how much of the spike gets through.
Right.
Before it's successfully grounded.
Right.
And it should be measured in nanoseconds.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'll ask Dan.
My wife just got a new computer for Christmas. The kids, they were.
An Apple, I hope.
No.
What?
That's what I would have done. But they went out, cobbled the system together. My daughter, I wasn't part of it. My daughter and her fiance, they went out. They actually researched who produced them, and they bought a Thai language keyboard.
Nice.
Which is English and Thai, and they got the typing tutorial for Thai, and a bunch of stuff, which is really cute, And they got a nice flat screen, But I went out and said, nope, gotta get you a UPS, we're not gonna mess around with that little surge protector thing, and got it hooked up, so.
The Mac rule was yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And I have some stock, actually it's become very valuable now.
In Apple?
It jumped $5 yesterday on Jobs' presentation. He did an hour and a half presentation, which I then watched on a video feed last night. My wife thought I was crazy. I said, hey, this is the value of our stock went up $5,000 today. I think I can watch this man and see what he said and why it went up.
Yeah.
The Apple stuff. And his announcement with Intel and his announcement, they sold 14 million of those stupid little iPods in the fourth quarter alone. And he said the most astronomical projections were 8 million.
Right. So 14 million. And those, it's not just the little iPods. I mean, now you can download all kinds of stuff onto movies.
The number one video download now is the 15-minute bowl blast, which is a highlight of the national championship game. Yeah. And they've got all four of the bowls. And he said they put that thing out. Keith Jackson narrates it. And he said that became the fastest seller overnight.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's incredible. I mean, it's incredible stuff. It was exciting.
Yeah, that's true. Fortress, I got news for you. I don't know an iPod. I have no plans to own an iPod.
Yeah. We'll see. They come out next year, 40% of the cars delivered in the United States.
This one occurs the wrong days of the week. I simply can't
do it. Well, this day of your iPod. Yeah, that's good news.
But I am going down to 20. Now, as far as the other one, it's the state requirement. I told Michael, I'm going to take mine in the summertime.